Welcome to the Sports Carnage Podcast, presented by Detroit Sports Nation, featuring Paul Roshan, D. Dylan Bear, and Ryan Griffin, delivering the most arrogant takes on the planet straight to your ears. We don't promise to always be right, but we promise to act like we are.
Welcome, everybody, to the inaugural Sports Carnage Podcast. If you guys have not heard, well, now you know. So, we have three lovely hosts here. We have myself, Ryan Griffin. I'm, of course, joined by Paul Roshan and D. Dylan Bear. Three of us met when we were doing writing, journalism, whatever you want to call it, blogging for Detroit Sports Nation, who is going to be hosting our podcast. Pretty much all we're going to do is be talking about sports, although we are based out of Detroit. None of us really are too into Detroit sports. Not like that anyway. Me and Paul have great love for our local teams. Dylan does not. But we have broader national interest where we kind of bring different areas of expertise. So I'm very excited to kind of go ahead. You'll see who knows what as we get to kicking off. I'll let these guys introduce themselves for a minute. But to kind of just give you a taste of what our first show is going to be, we're going to start off talking about some disrespect in the NBA. And it's going to be a very football-heavy show. We got college football playoff approaching. We got kind of a clear picture of what the NFL playoffs are going to look like, who's really starting to rise to the cream of the crop and be contenders, and who's falling down being pretenders, who's going to be there at the end that maybe you don't expect now. But before we get into our first segment, I will let our gentlemen introduce themselves. So, Paul, why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, I'm Paul. I've done a lot of writing, a lot of broadcasting, a lot of different things. Like Ryan said, we're all from Detroit area, but we don't all love Detroit sports. Me and Ryan are big on our Detroit area teams. Dylan, not so much. He's got a really eclectic fandom from all over the place.
Great word.
But yeah, he's ramping up that vocabulary early in the segment, right? But we will branch out a lot. This isn't going to be – obviously, we're going to hit the local teams, especially college. We're all huge college fans, and we will talk about a lot of the local stuff. But we are going to be a very national show. We're very diverse in our fandom, and we do pay attention, especially NFL, NBA, are really the big two sports. I like a little bit of hockey. I know these guys aren't big hockey fans, and we might throw in some baseball in the mix when it's relevant. But we're just going to kind of – talk about the things that we want to talk about, the stuff that we find interesting, whatever's going on lately, and whatever we really want to hammer out. And the weird stuff is probably going to come from Dylan.
So, yeah, great lead-in for myself. So I am D. Dylan Bear. I, as they have alluded to, my fine cohorts, while I was born and raised here, I
great
am
word.
Not a big... What?
Great word.
While I am from this area, my fandom, however, spreads across far further reaches than the pity that is Detroit sports, which will be a common theme as I dig into it. But we all have our own specialties. Ryan's the big NBA guy. Paul is especially into the NFL. College football is definitely where my main crux of knowledge comes from, but hopefully our discourse will be for your listening pleasure. So on to the good stuff, Ryan. So you have something in the NBA that happened not too far away.
No, terrific. So now that we got the Band-Aid ripped off of our awkward intro podcast, we can start to, you know, get to ripping it in like a Beyblade. So basically what we have going on in the NBA is we've had a ton of 50-point games, and then we had a almost 50-point game by the youngest player to have the highest scoring number this season, if that makes any sense. But Jamal Murray of the Nuggets going up against what is traditionally a very good defense in the Boston Celtics. He put up 48 points in an absolutely fantastic game. The Nuggets won, you know, you could pretty much say strictly because of Murray's contributions. The story of the game isn't that Murray scored 48 points, though, because that's been done in the NBA, that's been done, and it'll be done again. The big story was at the end of the game, it's generally frowned upon when you have the ball and you're up late to shoot, to try and run up the score, to try and pad your own stats. Long story short, Murray had 48 points,
clock's running out. He's dribbling it out. You can kind of tell he's figuring out if he should shoot it or not to try and get the 50 piece, because it'd be his first 50-point game in his career, of course. So at the end, he jacks up a three. A lot of the Celtics took exception to it. One notably, Kyrie Irving, who chucked the ball into the stands. And then afterward, of course, the media was going to ask him about it. Kyrie said, basically paraphrasing, hey, great game for Jamal Murray. But, of course, the ball's got to go into the stands after you pull some bullshit move like that. I know a lot of the players on the Celtics felt the same way, because they all gave the same answer, just not as colorful as Kyrie. So what I want to get into with you guys is, did you, one, feel the move was disrespectful or not? And two, regardless of whether you felt it was disrespectful, I guess, how would you handle the situation if it was a player on your team, or if it was a player on your team that shot the ball, or if it was a player against you that was ripping you guys up and then shot it?
So I'll start off fielding this. So first off, the one thing that I know you and I, Ryan, have always agreed about is that the NBA has a really uncanny way of taking the news away from other sports. And stuff like this is exactly how the NBA thrives, the drama, the, you know, the pridefulness, what have you.
It's a soap opera.
Hey, and I'm all the more for it. So I personally don't care. I love Jamal Murray as it is. I think his transition to point guard for the Nuggets is awesome for them. He's needed a game like this, because to start the year, his scoring hadn't been nearly to this level. This is something that the Nuggets are already second right now in the West. If he's able to score not 50, but a lot more prolifically from that point guard spot, all the better for him. And if this gives him a charge, fine. And it's another thing in a principle I know, Paul, you and I have agreed with before about running up the score. If you're not good enough to stop us, that's your problem, not mine.
Listen, Jamal Murray is 21 years old. The dude was born and raised in Canada, so I can promise you he's not trying to disrespect anybody. He's Canadian, okay? So he ain't trying to hurt nobody's feelings. The dude's 21, and he's on the verge of a 50-piece. You haven't stopped him all night. Take the shot. I don't care. It doesn't matter if the game's over. Whose feelings are your... You're shooting a ball through a hoop, man, in a game that's over. Get your 50 points. If they don't want you to get 50 points, they can try something that might be shocking to a lot of followers of the NBA, but play some defense, man. I think it's ludicrous, and I don't care for the old school talk about sportsmanship, man. The kid is 21 years old dropping a 50-piece in a regular season NBA game that, quite frankly, doesn't matter at all. The Nuggets, by the way, love the Nuggets. I love this team. It is one of the few teams that I could really say that I love in the NBA. I was a fan of them last year. I love their giant Serbian that has handles like a dude half
Nikola
his size.
Nikola Jokic.
Oh my God, I love him so much. Joker. Honestly, no, this is a fun young team to watch, and I'm ecstatic to see them actually making some noise in the West. We'll see how much they can hold it together and what they actually do come playoff time, assuming that they get there. But I think this is, like I said, a soap opera before. Much ado about nothing. Go get your 50 points, man. I mean, he took a shot. He missed it. It doesn't matter. I mean, I don't know how much different the reaction would have been had he made it. But I think it's just a bunch of, to steal a buzzword from the media, I think it's just a bunch of butthurt right now. I think it's ridiculous. Kyrie and me, yeah, threw the ball into the stands. Took a $25,000 fine for that,
that's
by the
true,
way.
Yep.
But, I mean, that's just throw. Such a bitter... That's just such a bitter move. I mean, let the kid have his game ball. Like, are you kidding me right now? If there's anything to be mad about that from that game, it's that Kyrie stole his moment by chucking that memento into the stands. I mean, let him have the ball. Ridiculous.
I mean, to me, that's the part of it that's kind of most interesting, is Kyrie Irving as just a natural bucket getter. You think if there was anyone that would kind of understand wanting that milestone, it would be Kyrie. Not necessarily that he's done that before. Maybe he has. Of course, it just hasn't been as well documented, or I can't think of the instance off the top of my head. But if someone told you, hey, instead of Jamal Murray did that was Kyrie Irving, I'm pretty sure you could at least see that. For me, I mean, it was disrespectful because of your unwritten rules of the NBA or whatever. But I'm also in that school of thought of, even though if it was disrespectful, it wouldn't be disrespectful if you didn't let him score the first 48 points and he wasn't trying to stat pad to 50. If you didn't let him get those 48, he's not going to choke up that shot to try and get 50. So you guys just might as well stop him the entire rest of the game if you don't want him doing that. My favorite part of it, though, wasn't the disrespect, wasn't the ball throwing it. It was my man Isaiah Thomas scorned Celtics point guard, now on the Nuggets, injured, so he's out, looking sharp in his 5'7" man suit. He was the first person to come off the Nuggets bench and greet Jamal Murray with the biggest smile, because I knew he loved that. So that's pretty much what we had to say for that. Now, next NBA topic. I'm just kidding. If I was here, we could do NBA all day, but we're going to get into football like I promised. So we're going to go ahead and start with our, you guys want to start with our college football rankings, or you want to start with our NFL?
We're going to start with the NFL, because I think it's perfect. We're talking about old people getting butt hurt over disrespect. Yeah. And I want to talk about the old guard of the NFL. For a while now, we've been in transition. We went through a lull a few years with kind of subpar quarterback play across a lot of the league. And basically, you have all of your elite quarterbacks are getting really old, and we didn't have a lot of the young kids ready to play. Well, two of the hottest and, quite frankly, the best teams in the NFL, two teams that I know a lot of people would love to see play in the Super Bowl this season, are the Kansas City Chiefs and LA Rams, both led by quarterbacks on the rookie contracts. Kansas City Chiefs with Mahomes really his first year starting. And you can say if we discard the Jeff Fisher year, that doesn't really count. It's not like Goff has a lot of experience either. They've been tearing up pretty much everybody in the NFL, and they've been doing it with ease, especially on the offensive side of the ball. And they're really, really good teams. But I just found it interesting that if you look back the past few weeks, those teams have a combined two losses. And those losses for the Rams, that came at the hands the other night against Drew Brees in New Orleans, and Patrick Mahomes and his Chiefs, their loss came at the hands of Tom Brady and his glorious Patriots. So I just want to talk about a little bit is everybody's been like, we're passing the torch, we're passing the torch. But are these kids, are these teams, are the fans even, are we ready to put these old guys to bed and move on? Or do we still need them? And are these young kids ready to take the torch? Because it's not going to be given to them. So I want to know what you guys think about that.
I mean, I think that the kids are ready, especially if you look like a guy like Pat Mahomes. You know, even Carson Wentz, he didn't win the Super Bowl last year, but you know, he's the reason that the Eagles got there. So I think there's plenty of young quarterback talent that, you know, is able to take the league by storm. You even saw it with Cam Newton a couple years ago, who's having a really good season. Russell Wilson a couple years ago. And not that, you know, those aren't still great quarterbacks, but
I don't want to interrupt you, but I kind of have to. I just find it really interesting that you brought up Cam Newton as a young quarterback that had a really good season, because he was beaten by Father Time himself in the Super Bowl.
He was beaten by that defense.
For sure. I mean, Peyton Manning had nothing to do with that. I could have played quarterback out there in that game.
I think he had in that game.
Right. And then, I mean, even Russ's Super Bowl that they won, right? That was the defense. Not saying Russ played bad in that game.
Yeah, but don't it was disrespect the defense our
completely shutting
don't
down
you
Father
dare Man. Blaspheme
but,
Russell.
So I think the game itself, in the game of football, is good if we let these young quarterbacks play out the way, you know, we think they're going to play out. I think what's more interesting is that the fans aren't ready to let it go. I mean, you saw it with Sunday Night Football. Instead of Saints-Rams, right, they pimped out Brady versus Rodgers. So, and the fans, of course, the media for the game, they're not ready to let those guys go. Those are still the guys in the commercials. You're not going to see a Pat Mahomes commercial anytime soon. You really don't see Russell Wilson commercials, at least not that I can think of off the top of my head.
No
Jared Goff commercials, no Carson Wentz commercials. So until those guys are actually ready to take that next step, the game is going to need those older guys and those recognizable faces that you see more than just on Sundays.
But that changes when one of them wins a Super Bowl.
Yeah, well, okay. So here's the thing is that one thing that you bring up, Paul, is the two losses to the old guys. However, that is a very loaded statement, and it's not painting the entire picture. So, number one, the Rams go on the road in the hardest environment to win in the NFL. I know there's the 12th man with Seattle, and that's adorable, and it's really nice and what have you. But with New Orleans, the stadium itself and the fans, like, the Saints are the state of Louisiana. And when you go and play there, especially when they're as good as they are, that's a really tough formula, especially when the big thing with the Rams and the Chiefs
it's not the quarterbacks that are the problem. It's the defenses. If Marcus Peters gives up another passing touchdown, he may need to be traded for Tez Tabor. That's how bad he has been on one-on-one coverage. All right,
now we're getting to PTSD. Let's chill.
I'm just saying Marcus Peters has been destroyed this year for the Rams. He has, in coverages where he was the primary defender, he has given up, I believe it's 8 touchdowns just by himself.
I don't know the number. I hope that's not true.
No, it was 7 going into the Saints game, and I believe...
That is so bad.
I know. He's been awful. And to be fair, this Rams D that they paid so much for has not really shown up. The Rams outshoot teams. They don't shut them out. I mean, Minnesota game was a perfect example of that, and then you had the Saints game as well. I mean, these are high-scoring games, and Goff is not the reason that they're losing. And with Mahomes, sure,
he's... Well, they're not really losing much.
But you get what I mean, though. They're closer than they should be.
I do. That's an excellent point about the Rams' defense, and I don't have the numbers in front of me. I don't know what their scoring defense ranks, but definitely in their primetime games, like you mentioned, the Minnesota game, of course, the Saints game, it hasn't been their defense that's shown up. Maybe they show up against the Browns and the Jets of the world, but certainly when they've been put on that primetime stage, they have not performed like you would expect. You know, a top defense, a defense with Donald and Sue, you know, Aqib Talib to perform.
And so moving on to Mahomes as well, the game that they lost to the Patriots is really hard to say is that, yeah, oh, well, he's young. Well, he is, but he isn't. The way he's played this year and just the way he's taken over Andy Reid's offense, which we all know is a very complicated scheme to run, that Patriots game that he played, I mean, I watched through the whole thing. That first quarter was the most un-Mahomes performance you could have seen. And to be fair, they possibly should have won that game, and they had a bad quarter of a quarterback that just doesn't do it. And everybody, any pundit I've ever heard talk about that game right after it, said that 9 times out of 10 that game's played again, Patriots are losing. This new guard is only being hampered by the bad defenses that are matched with their teams. It's like this new formula going into the NFL where you would much rather have an offense that scores 35 a game than a defense that holds teams under 20.
So one thing I'll touch on the Rams a little bit. I think their defense is getting a little too much flack because I think people had crazy high expectations, especially for, so you said they went out and bought a defense, right? Well, that defense is going to take time. These players haven't played together. They don't know the scheme. It's going to take time to really come together, and I think you're going to really see that in the playoffs because they certainly have the talent, especially on that defensive line. I think they're going to really, really punish teams in the playoffs where you really need to be strong in the trenches, especially. I mean, we've seen defensive lines take over how many Super Bowls. The Rams, for as maligned as they've been, for as bad as Marcus Peters has been, they're 10th in points per drive allowed. So they're not, they haven't been terrible when the defense has been on the field. For every drive that they're on the field, they're still in the top 10 on points allowed. That's not awful. I mean, that's not, it's not too far off from league average, but it's certainly not terrible. And especially, they haven't been the healthiest team on that side of the ball in the NFL either. And I'm not giving them a pass. But to me, the Rams are the best team in the NFL. And I know that last week they lost to the Saints. It was a really good game. They came out really flat, and the Saints came out absolutely on fire. They made it a game in the second half. Part of that, I think, was the Saints slowing down a bit. But I still think the Rams are the best team in the NFL. I think the Saints are up there. I think they're an exceptionally good team. I think the Patriots will always be in that conversation as long as they have Belichick and Brady, no matter who's on the roster. I think that the Chiefs are certainly up there, and I think that you can make an argument for some other teams that are getting healthy, like the Vikings, but there is so much football to play. So much football to play this year. We are halfway through this season, and we have seen some fantastic games. We're not going to see many this week, because this week's slate of games is just garbage, but there is a ton of football to play, and I think come playoffs, that's where you're going to see whether these young quarterbacks are truly ready to take some of that torch. I honestly don't think Kansas City, I wouldn't be surprised if Kansas City does not make the AFC Championship game, despite having what I think will actually probably be the number one seed, because I think Kansas City is almost too young. And I don't – it's not to knock age or to say that young quarterbacks can't do it. And we've talked about guys that can, especially guys that had a lot of help like Russell Wilson. Tom Brady won his second year starting even though he wasn't that young. Or maybe it was the first or second year that Tom Brady won.
I
think it was the second year. But anyways, young quarterbacks have won Super Bowls before. But usually they have a lot of help. And of course, the Rams have a really good team around Goff. The Chiefs have a really good team around Mahomes. But I don't know if the Chiefs are going to be ready. I'm more worried about the Chiefs than I am the Rams. And I'm more worried about the Chiefs' defense. You want to talk about a bad defense. We were talking points per drive, right? Rams are still in the top 10. Chiefs are in the bottom 10. Their defense really is bad on any level. Like, if you're going to – the Chiefs have to win shootouts. Like, I don't see the Chiefs' defense ever taking over a game against a decent team or really being a difference maker in a good way. I could see the Rams getting on track and their defense really taking over a game. A team I would kind of compare them to almost, except with a better quarterback at this point in their careers, is Denver. When Denver won the Super Bowl a few years ago. Now, theirs was – more based on the strengths of their defense. But I think LA, especially in the defensive line, has a defense that can take over a game, and they have a lot of talent at those skill position players, like Denver did, and their quarterback just has to kind of manage the game and get the ball in the hands of his playmakers. I think LA is kind of hands down the best team in the NFL this year. I don't think that necessarily means they win the Super Bowl, but I think they're really, really good. I would love to see a rematch of the other night in the playoffs. What we won't see is a rematch of Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady in the Super Bowl because the Packers blow and Aaron Rodgers is overrated as his per norm. But this is great for the sport. Let's not get past. I mean, yeah, we've all grown up with a lot of these quarterbacks, the Brees, the Bradys, the Phillip Rivers, who, by the way, Chargers having a great season. We didn't even talk about them. But
I don't believe in the Chargers.
We need
no, not at all.
I see the limiter of the Chargers is they're the unluckiest team that I've ever seen in football. We're going on like 4 years right now that they just have awful major injuries to major players. It's just like unbelievable. Finally, they at least have kind of a healthy-ish team. And I love Phillip Rivers. I'm a big Phillip Rivers fan. No, I believe in the Chargers. I think their depth. It comes into question. I don't think their offensive line is that good, and I think their injuries and depth in offensive line, those three things are going to ultimately be what keeps them out of making a run in the playoffs. But it's certainly a team that I wouldn't want to face, and I'm glad that they're not on the Lions schedule. So, but no, I think this is really important to football to have these young teams doing really well. There are teams led by young quarterbacks. We need this. But nothing gets younger and nothing gets better than college
not
football.
At all.
We could sit here and talk about the NFL all day, but it will still pale in comparison to the greatness that is college football. So I want to talk about college football because they're A, no better sport in all the land. If you think differently,
except for regular football.
We're in America and you have the freedom to be wrong, but college football really is the best sport in the land. And finally, for the first time in a while, locally, we have a team worth talking about in the national.
The shade.
Well played.
Okay.
Well played.
Background for a quick second. Paul's a Michigan apologist. Just get used to it now. I'm just bracing you for it. Ryan is the Michigan State slap, and I am the neutral party. So this is like political. We got left, right, and center. So
hold on. He says he's the neutral party. He
much is more than
a
Ryan
Spartan
is.
Through and through, but because he's such an Eeyore, he just gets depressed over their trash performances.
We are not pulling that name into this. I'm cutting that in the bud right now. That ain't happening.
No. This is Dylan's nickname since we're given backup. Yes, we are. Eeyore. Anyways,
Eeyore.
College football. First thing, Alabama looks like a juggernaut. But Alabama plays nobody because their conference is an overrated pile of
right. A nighttime primetime game in Death Valley is playing nobody.
Do you think Joe Burrow is a good quarterback?
I didn't say that, did I?
Do you think LSU is a good team?
I don't really care. It's like playing a night game in Penn State. You saw what happened. Penn State's a garbage team, but they still almost beat Ohio State.
Who is
the
not
whole point,
that good
the
this
whole
year.
Point of college is those intangible things. You know better than anybody because of 2016. The fact that they shut out
LSU 29-0 on the road in a college game day primetime environment is impressive. Whether LSU is good
I'm not saying it's not.
And LSU is good. Their quarterback's just right.
Well, they always will.
I don't think LSU's that good. I think this actually touches on almost a problem, but because college football's so good, it doesn't matter. You are almost seeing an NBA-esque split. Yeah.
He's a college football apologist too.
In football and the dredges of football, which are the gap is widening between have and the have-nots.
I don't know if I would say that's entirely accurate because we see certain teams have chinks in the armor, so to speak. Ohio State has not looked perfect. They are obviously not untouchable. Penn State, same deal. These Nebraska, these blue blood programs can fall. It's all about how
I guess that's part of what I'm getting at.
Right. I think he's talking about you have one team that you just know is going to win. That's what it looks like in both sports. In college, you're going to say Alabama wins, and NBA, it's Warriors.
The Pac-12 doesn't have a single good team. They're just all whatever. The Big 12, Oklahoma's kind of carrying that torch. They don't even play defense, no. At all. Like, if they play any of, the big other defense teams,
welcome to college football besides
they're
going to
get lit.
No, that's not accurate.
You go to the Big 10, that is so accurate. Michigan finally looks really good. The rest of the Big 10, and literally every decent team, has taken a step back from where they were expected to be. So it's just growing in disparity. Look at the ACC, right?
I'll fight right you there. On that. The ACC actually looks a lot better.
Everyone says Clemson is right there in that
tier. Well,
that's
because you love Syracuse,
Bama,
Boston College.
Okay, I do love Syracuse.
And those other trash teams.
They're not trash. Syracuse is amazing.
On a neutral field where both teams are trying, Clemson is a minimum 30 points better than any other team in the SEC.
That's insane. I wouldn't say that.
That is insane. And I will give a little prelude because we're going to do picks later. I'm not picking Clemson in the crazy amount of points that they're being gifted this week. But no, on a neutral field, if they're both actually trying, like it's a freaking playoff game or something, no, Clemson is literally 30 points better than any other team in the ACC.
Hold on, time out. You think that
the ACC is terrible.
You think that they're 30 points better than Georgia? I don't think that.
I said ACC.
You said SEC.
You did say SEC.
You said first. SEC.
And then you said ACC, but you did say SEC first.
I clearly meant the ACC.
I thought you were making a point that
was not very clear.
Yeah, that was not clear.
No, not the SEC. No, all I'm getting at is, so that's a one-team conference, clearly. The Big Ten might be a one-team conference.
Let's just
call
for what it is. They are.
But the Big Ten, well, hold on. I am not ready to anoint Michigan to that spot.
Little brother syndrome.
And it's not even about anointing Michigan. It's about understanding that everybody else is.
Hey,
you can look
at
them play and see that
they're
worse.
I need you to say this right now.
Michigan has to prove it in Columbus.
Fine. But that doesn't change the fact that
Big Ten
sucks.
My overarching point is all of college football
has
the same issue right now.
Ohio State still not be
all of college football has the same issue right now. Every decent conference right now is pretty much a one-conference team, or
a one-team conference.
So then there's
no
decent conference.
And then you have two conferences that are completely garbage.
I would argue. So, to answer your really long-winded question, which I'll just sum up, is that college football looks like the NBA. Everything is a one-trick pony. Is that bad for the sport? My argument would be that because of conference realignment, that is why these conferences look so bad, because the product is way more diluted because of it, specifically the Big Ten. And also, this is kind of a one-year problem. We didn't have this issue last year. This is just one of those years where this happens. It happens every so often where this will occur. It's just part of the problem. Alabama's not going to be as good as they are this year. Clemson is not going to run this unopposed next year. It's fine. It's not that big a deal.
It actually hurts my soul when you say something that's so profoundly correct that I can't make fun of you. That I can't even attempt to make fun of you.
I'm the Eeyore, but you're the one feeling sad that you can't be mean.
I mean, I think it's a good thing this year because if you have those four or five because of the playoff, they all end up playing each other.
Those games are going
to
be
lit. At the end of the year, everybody's happy because the best teams play each other. It's not going to matter what happened the first 12, 13, 14 weeks of the season.
And that's the best thing Dylan said was that it's a one-year problem. What if it was an year problem? It's not. A 1 year problem.
It'll be fine.
It is 100% a 1 year problem. But I mean, would contend.
One consecutive year, but you're, like Dylan said, you're always going to have years like this. So it could be the same thing in 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, we're just not talking about year after year.
I'm just saying, certain programs that are really down right now, or ones that are just starting out, specifically, you know how I feel about Texas A&M, they're not going to be as dormant as they are. Penn State is not going to stay this mediocre. Texas is not going to stay this mediocre.
Penn State might be starting over soon. Who? But we're not... Penn State. You said Penn State, right?
I'm aware, but I'm just saying that these sleeping... It's kind of like Michigan. There was no way that Michigan was going to stay bad for that long.
It's the dormant volcano. Exactly. Like, they're sleeping giants. Like, I get it. But I would actually contend, and maybe it's just my insane love for college football, but I would say that college football is uniquely positioned to handle years like this. Absolutely. Better than any other league on the planet. Because there's so much going on in college football, and they have so much going for it. And college football, maybe uniquely, is not all about titles. Like, there's so much more, and every program has such different goals. Like, you go to the NFL, everyone's goal is to win a Super Bowl. Like, no one's hanging, okay, I take this back. No one should be hanging banners for participating in a wild card
game. Forward down the field.
Indy did it first. Indy did the participation banners first, okay? I just want to point that out. But college football, it's a lot different. It's a completely different thing. And because of that, we can still enjoy it no matter what form it takes. Whether we have these juggernauts and these really one-team conferences at the top, there's the game within the game all through college football, all through the conferences, all through the different regions. There's the rivalries, and that's what makes college football great. But we're going to talk about this year. Who... Everyone, if I ask you guys, anyone in the country, who's your number one team? It's Bama. Everyone's going to say the same thing. They're going to put Clemson at number two.
No, I wouldn't, actually.
You're not going to put Clemson at number two. Who are you putting at number
you.
Two?
You.
Okay. I appreciate that. That is extremely... So we started podcasting, and Dylan all of a sudden became reasonable and measured in his takes.
Oh, my God.
I need a minute to process this.
All right.
This.
Well,
that's
calm down.
Nice
first off.
I just want to see us play in the field.
I took it back.
Because here's the thing. We need to pass a huge test in Columbus.
You are such a little
above,
you are going to be fine.
I will tell you right now, we are the much better
substantially.
Team. I would say that if Shea Patterson got hurt, we are still the better team.
Still win.
Yeah, you said Karan Higdon would play quarterback, if I remember correctly.
We have demons
you guys still
that we need to exercise.
Which you have been with this kind of badass branding revenge tour.
The revenge tour is my favorite thing ever. It's amazing. I know you hate it. You hate
it's
the shirt.
So
you hate
cool.
everything
it's
about
most,
it.
It's the shirt that looks like a Taylor
Swift
concert shirt.
The greatest. How can
no,
you hate
Antonio
it? It's like
not
trust
go to
the process, except
and then rip off their logo design.
Oh, stop!
It is. Oh, forget. Stop on the font. The font of the shirt is
again,
irrelevant.
The Eeyore title.
You, it's like
shit.
Trusting the
whole shirt.
This
is
trusting the process, except you're actually processing every single game throughout the season.
It. It's
and this is, and I love. It's not just, okay, so Michigan's been down and they've been beaten and they're just coming back. Michigan has gone full heel with this. Michigan isn't just, we want to beat these teams that have beaten us. Michigan is playing the bad guy.
What do you mean full
like,
heel?
Not...
Everybody wants them to win every single one of those games except for fans of the opposing team. That's not
a
heel.
Nobody wants Michigan to win. That's
you're right.
Wrong.
They were
Michigan,
all dying to see Alex Hornibrook.
Michigan is the most hated program in college football.
Is not
that's accurate. It's just a fact
that
second is Bama because of their success. People don't like Michigan. It is because Michigan is arrogant. I'll say it right now. Michigan has always been arrogant, whether they've won or whether they've lost. And that's part of maybe why I like Michigan so much. Maybe it's part of what endears me to them.
So
but I love that now that Michigan's good, they're not going to Brady Hulk apologize after a game for something that one of their players. No, they are going to beat you and they're going to rub it in your face. And that's I want to go to Columbus and I want to win by 25 points. And I want Chase Winovich to piss on the O in the middle of the field. It's not going to happen, but nothing would make me happier in the entire world. Yeah, just like Calvin Hobbs. Great reference, by the way. Younger viewers of this show might not even know what that is, but
back when
your disappointment's your parents, just so you know.
Thing.
It was. The best of the
word
best. But no, I just love that. I love everything about the Revenge Tour. I love that Michigan's actually really good. I love that they've embraced their role and they're not apologizing. But they need to, A, pass the test in Columbus. Then I'm not even the slightest worried about the game in Indy.
You mean your rematch with the overrated Clayton Thorson?
Well, there's a huge game this week in the Big Ten, on the west side at least, to see who Michigan is going to wax in the Big Ten title game. It really, though, before we do the picks, I want to talk just a tiny bit, the local thing, and I'm a masochist. I want to talk about the Lions just real quick. Just want to talk about the Detroit Lions, not the Nittany Lions. Detroit
Lions.
Care
about your team. You're going to lose to my Bears.
They suck. Next segment.
Okay. Thank God.
You're welcome, Dylan.
Thank you.
So as I said, huge matchup in the Big Ten West this week. This game, if Northwestern wins, Northwestern is going to Iowa. And as any Michigan fan would know, they should fear the water tower. And this game is going to go a long way towards deciding the Big Ten West. Northwestern wins this game, it's a wrap. They're done. They're going to the title game. No one in the West can touch them. Iowa wins this game, really mixes things up. And everyone thinks Iowa's going to win this game. Iowa is shocking to me. To me, this is crazy. Iowa is a 10-point favorite. They are at home, but against Northwestern, a Northwestern team that just lost by 10 to Notre Dame, a little disappointing game. They weren't as competitive as some people thought they'd be, but they certainly did not get blown off the field. I think this spread's crazy. I'm taking Northwestern all day. I think Northwestern could win this game, and I might put some money on Northwestern to win this game straight up because the odds are so appealing. I think this is an easy one to take Northwestern in the 10 points playing for the Big Ten West championship game.
I agree. I think if Iowa does end up pulling out the W, they're going to take a 3-point or a 7-point win. They're not going to win by two scores.
So Iowa, the thing about Iowa that's kind of frustrating for me is that I actually really like the Water Tower. They are 6-3. And they have no right to actually have to be that bad. Their last two games, they should have won both of them at Penn State and at Purdue. This Iowa team is different than many other Kirk Ferentz teams because they can actually score. Northwestern can't. I will take the points with Iowa.
10-point favorite, and Dylan has taken them. See, I think that's – I just – blows my mind. Anyways, we're going to hit on one of the most irrelevant. I shouldn't say irrelevant. These are two teams that everybody expected to contend for the Big Ten. You have Wisconsin and traveling to Happy Valley in a game that you circle this game at the beginning of the season, and you're thinking that this has huge Big Ten implications. It is crazy to look at this game and see that this game probably will not affect the Big Ten race at all. Like, it doesn't matter. If Wisconsin somehow wins this game, and then Iowa takes down Northwestern, maybe the West gets a little crazy. But you have Wisconsin playing without Hornibrook. And as much crap as we give Alex Hornibrook for not being a good quarterback, he is way better than what is behind door number two at quarterback for the Badgers. So Wisconsin going on the road to Penn State, an 8-point dog, and I have to take Penn State. I mean, did you see what a Hornibrook-less Wisconsin team looked like last week? It was embarrassing. It was absolutely, I mean, they looked bad enough against Michigan. Then they lose Hornibrook, and they look even worse last week. Penn State is coming off a bitter loss. They are maybe a little more talented than they showed last week against Michigan. I'm taking Penn State at home in a big win. I mean, I think Penn State's going to win by at least 17 points this game.
So as far as the Penn State-Wisconsin goes, I do appreciate you trying to say it's relevant after off-air, if you want to call it that. Me and Dylan were complaining about how irrelevant this game was. But regardless, I am going to take Penn State. While I don't think Franklin is on the hot seat, I think he's very frustrated with the team, the way his team has performed. I think they'll show up at home. He's going to take out his sexual frustrations like a Catholic who just got married. Give me Penn State, and I'll take the points.
So this spread, Penn State has backslid like crazy, and apparently the theme for Penn State quarterbacks is to have an awesome sophomore year and just be awful afterwards. That's the Penn State way, apparently. I mean, I just laugh at Kirk Herbstreit whenever he said that Trace McSorley was the best player in college football. Absolute joke. Jack Cohn, who is going to be starting for Wisconsin, 25 of 38 on the year passing, 222 yards, 65% completion percentage, 2 touchdowns, no picks. I'm going to take Wisconsin.
Ballsy. I like it. And about Kirk Herbstreit, I mean, did you see what Trace McSorley did to his Buckeyes? You gotta give him a little bit pass there. Listen, we talked...
That was preseason,
We talked about how bad all of these conferences are, how they're one-team conferences. And now we're going to see, go a long way to seeing how bad the ACC is outside of Clemson. Clemson's traveling to Boston College, a team that has surprised this year. Star running back A.J. Dillon should be back for this game. He's really, really good, but that's Boston College. I mean, it's kind of like Kentucky with Snell, right? So Clemson is a 20-point favorite on the road in this game. And we talked about, I think, on a neutral field, if they're playing like their playoff hopes are on the line, I think Clemson's 30 points better than anybody in this conference. They're going to need to go a long way towards – they could go a long way towards proving that this week. I don't think they do. I think Boston College, I think this is one of those games that Clemson plays a lot closer than it should be, because it's what they do every single year. It's why they almost lose and sometimes do lose to teams like Syracuse and to teams like Pitt. I certainly don't think they're going to lose this game, but I don't think they're going to cover the 20. I think A.J. Dillon is going to have a big game for them, and I see this being much more like a 7, 10, 13-point game. 20 is just way too much to cover for me.
So, for me, I actually really hope that Clemson gets a fight somehow. Their schedule, everyone talks about Michigan's schedule being too easy. Clemson's has been substantially easier. This is by far the hardest test they have left. It is a game day. It is prime time. Boston College up there in Massachusetts is going to be pretty cold, so that's going to predicate to the running game. Boston College, 23rd in the nation in rushing yards, and also, much more important, 4th in the nation in points against at 24.1. It'll be a close game. I'll take BC.
So now that my mic is working, I know Dylan doesn't think Clemson is the second-best team in college football. I do. And I also don't believe in Boston College. The spread started out at 17.5. It has gone up to 20. That makes me think that everybody else knows that Boston College is fraudulent. So I'm going to take Clemson to cover.
And I could see that happening easily. I already told you guys I think the 30 points better than anybody in this conference. I just think this is going to be one of those games that Clemson ends up having to grind out, or at least is closer than the spread would indicate. We go to the other conference with a one-team race. Bama hosting Mississippi State. 25-point favorites. And again, I mean, I have to take Bama. I'm not backing Mississippi State in this game. They just win. Mississippi State has lost to every decent team they face, and they haven't looked good doing, whether it was Florida, whether it was LSU. They haven't looked good against any decent team that they've played. Bama just went to Death Valley and absolutely waxed LSU 29-0. The only way Bama doesn't cover the 25 is if they just have a letdown, like a break game, like they treat it like a bye week.
So Bama just beat LSU by 30 on the road. There's no way that they don't beat Mississippi State by at least 25 at home. Give me Bama.
Is there a parrot in this room?
There's not. Mississippi State's leading rusher is their quarterback, Nick Fitzgerald. Fascinating fact for you, he is only 18 carries on the year less than Caron Higdon. He is the leading rusher going into this game. That is the worst formula possible for Alabama going against Alabama on the road. I'll take Bama. If you gave me 30, I'd take the over on that as well.
Now, the marquee game of the week, the Ohio State Buckeyes traveling to East Lansing to face the Spartans.
Go Green!
Very sarcastic with that marquee stuff. But when is the last time the Buckeyes faced MSU and were only a 3.5-point favorite? Now, I know the game's in East Lansing. I know MSU's looked all right the past few weeks. But Buckeyes, only a 3.5-point favorite. Buckeyes must win. I mean, they lose this game, their season's over. And they've been hearing it. I mean, I don't know if any of you read message boards. I've been trolling in some Buckeye message boards lately. Those fans, they're turned. They're all the way turned. They're ready to fire Urban. They're just ready to completely move on. Season's over.
Well, he's
going to
leave with a heart palpitation.
Oh, for sure. Buckeyes are going to win this, and they're going to win it by 10+. This is their season, and I think MSU's been pretty good. But here's where OSU struggles. They can't stop anybody, right? Like, their defense is awful. And anybody, we talked about this earlier in the season. I said anybody with an offensive pulse has a chance to upset OSU. MSU has one of the lesser defenses in the Big Ten. One of the lesser offenses in the Big Ten. And that's not, I mean, this is a Big Ten. It's not like we're offensive juggernauts. I think this is a game that OSU really comes out in start to finish, just puts the hammer down.
Yeah, I'm going to take OSU. I mean, nobody on Michigan State, even though who's starting at quarterback, Our starting quarterback says he's hurt. Our coach says if he's hurt, he wouldn't be playing. But, yeah, he continues to play. And then he just gets pulled for a quarterback who still isn't quite as good. But other than that, like Paul said, we're not going to be able to score with OSU, even if their defense is bad. We don't have the offensive firepower. Not without Felton Davis, not without knowing who the hell our quarterback's going to be. We're going to see that or on the depth chart this week, and it's going to infuriate me. So I'm going to take OSU to cover, and that will be my lock of the week.
Tough. You guys have been way more negative on this game. Maybe it's partially because I'm sirens, if you will. For the local folks, you know what that means. I am going to this game. I often wind up going to this sort of game. Ohio State definitely travels well, but here's the issue, and something I don't think y'all are considering here. State always plays really well in weather, right? We agree on that?
Yes.
No. Did you see what happened in the Michigan game this year?
Okay. It is going to be stupidly cold for this game. There's a chance of snow. And this game has been traditionally very low scoring over the last few years. There has only been twice where a team has gone over 40 points. There has also been 4 of the past seven matchups has been in the teens. That predicates Michigan State to do very well. Ohio State can't run the ball and can't stop the run. Ball control will be the name of the game. I will take Michigan State to upset Ohio State.
My lock of the week was Northwestern, by the way. We have a snoozer on the other side of the state. It's actually on the other side of the country. Michigan traveling to Rutgers. The last time Michigan went to Rutgers, I believe the score was 78-0. Funnest of fun facts, Ruth's Chris, famous steakhouse, was running a promotion back then, the Ann Arbor location, that UM's margin of victory could be applied to as a discount to your total bill at the restaurant. That was 78% off at Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. They don't do that anymore. They stopped the promotion after that year. Thank you, Rutgers. 39-point favorites. The only thing that scares me about this game is Michigan's backup quarterback situation. And before you guys start thinking I'm out of my gourd, I'm just talking strictly covering the spread. If Mac was healthy in the way he moves around and runs the ball, I think he could play the whole game and we would beat Rutgers by 50 points. And it's not that Brandon Peters isn't capable. It's that it's a different kind of offense and I don't think quite as prolific. That being said, there's no conceivable world you take Rutgers in this game and pray that they can cover 39. Sure, it depends on how the backups do when they come in the second quarter, but nobody's taking 39 points for Rutgers and praying they cover.
No. I mean, the biggest thing for me is I don't think Rutgers is going to score. So you have a zero right there, and I'm going to pick Michigan to score over 40 points. So Michigan will cover.
It is extremely bold to predict a shutout.
They lost by 80 2 years ago.
Rutgers are an FCS program who has a player on their roster being, detained for double murder, and they will be triple murdered in this game. I don't expect them to score either. They will lose by at least 45.
I stand corrected. That was the funnest fun fact of the week. They have a mobster on their team. It is New York, after all.
Well, it's New Jersey, but...
Where do the New York Giants play?
East Rutherford.
Not in Piscataway.
In New Jersey. Anyways, speaking of New York Giants, we have some NFL picks to make. And this slate was terrible to pick from. We only have 4 NFL games this week, and the 4 were a stretch. And if we didn't have a local game, we wouldn't even have 4.
Straight up trash.
We're going to start with one of the better games of the week, Carolina, Red Hot Carolina, with their own C-Mac, traveled to Pittsburgh to take on a team that has been extremely up and down, but has maybe my top 5 favorite player in the NFL, Mr. Connor, because Le'Veon Bell is a useless piece of garbage that not a very good teammate.
All right, so we're going to throw hands off.
He's not coming back this week. We'll see. We're going to throw. Why? Because Le'Veon Bell. Listen, I used to love Le'Veon Bell, all right? I used to love him. I didn't care that he went to MSU. He is a pile of garbage, and I'm glad that he's losing a buck.
Mike Hart is a pile of garbage.
This is one of the... why are we doing this?
Fitz too
smart. He never abandoned... his team, all right? This is a Thursday night football game that is actually good. We get good Thursday night football. Carolina going to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh opened as a 7-point favorite. That is all the way down to 4, and I am still taking Carolina. It's 7, that would have been my lock of the week. Carolina is hot right now. Pittsburgh is overrated. Can Pittsburgh win this game? Can they cover? Sure they can. But I don't think they're going to. I love what Carolina's doing, especially the way they have that offense moving right now. They're adding new dimensions to it every single week, and they are hot, man.
Yeah, so give me Carolina. I love the Panthers. Big fan of Cam Newton. My fantasy quarterback, both my leagues, both are doing terribly. But that's not Cam's fault. He's trying the best he can. Give me Carolina.
Pittsburgh's actually played really well. They basically shook a monkey off their back by winning in Baltimore.
This team is trending up.
So a fun little quirk of this show is we record it earlier in the week. Much like Bill Barnwell, when he used to write his NFL columns for Grantland, we do these picks before the games are played, obviously. But we don't publish the podcast until Friday afternoon, after the Thursday night game's already been played. So you guys get to see right away how our week is starting. And wow, did those Carolina takes not age well over a couple days' time.
Michigan State, 18 in the latest college football playoff ranking. Go Green.
I actually think that's pretty on. I don't think that's an overration. I think that's about where they should be. I think that defense is good enough when the offense is healthy. I think around 18. Damn. They're not a world beater, but it's not bad. It's not bad.
Sorry to interrupt. Let's continue.
That's legit. That's amazing. Go Green.
Go White.
All right, to the remaining NFL game, and it's not the last one that we're picking, but it is the last decent game on the slate. You got New Orleans traveling to Cincy, who has been up and down this year, but Cincy's looked pretty solid at times. I know a couple weeks ago I was told by someone whose opinion I respect, although I don't necessarily agree with, that he thinks this is the year Cincy finally wins a playoff game. Noah, traveling, 4.5-point favorite, the Fighting Andy Daltons. I'm actually taking Cincy. I think New Orleans really high off their win last week. They had a big win at home. I think things are going to be a little bit tougher this week on the offensive side of the ball. I don't think they're going to put up 45 million points against Cincy's defense. That's not that bad. I think Cincy's got a nice balanced attack going on offense. And I think this game's going to be close. I wouldn't be surprised at all. I actually think if I was picking this game for a win, I think New Orleans ekes it out. But I think it's going to be a 3 or 4 point victory. I don't think they're going to cover the 4.5.
I'll take New Orleans to cover the 4.5. I don't believe in Cincy as much as a lot of other people do. And right now, New Orleans is just rolling. I can see them having a slip-up game, but I don't see it being this game. I think Breeze keeps his boys moving forward.
Cincinnati's defense has given up over 30 points for their last 6 games. Give me New Orleans.
Seattle, traveling to those LA Rams, the Drew Brees and the Saints just beat. They're coming off a big disappointing game. You know they were hyped up for that game. At least you'd think they were hyped up for the game. But they didn't come out like they were hyped up for the game. It's their first loss of the season. 10-point favorites at home against Seattle. This line actually started at 11.5. It's crept down a little bit. That's a huge number in the NFL for a competent team. They're at home. I expect them to win. I expect them to jump out to an early lead. But 10 points against what I think is a well-coached football team, with what I think is a top 3 quarterback, my second best quarterback in the NFL, and Russell Wilson. I know they have deficiencies. I know the Rams are a lot better team. 10 points is just, it's too much for me to take against Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson. I'll take Seattle on the points.
The 10 scares me a lot because, like you said, it's a huge number in the NFL. I just keep going back to that Seattle offensive line is so bad. So Russell Wilson literally has to run for his life every
game. It's gotten better, though.
And the Rams. Yeah, but this isn't the team you want to test out your newly found fame or skill against. I think the Rams, at the end of the day, they're just going to have too much of a pass rush. The 10 scares me, but I can see them kind of easily winning by 13, 17 points, somewhere around there, especially at home coming off what I know is a disappointing loss to them for New Orleans. They started out super slow. I'm going to take the Rams to cover.
The winning formula for Seattle is to run the ball like they did against the Lions, which they won't do in a shootout, as we alluded to, with the Rams. It's going to be a really high-scoring game, but they won't keep pace. I'll take the Rams.
Grudge match of the week. Detroit traveling to Chicago. And this is where you learn a little bit more about Dylan and his ridiculous fandom, because he is a Bears fan and he is all about that Bears process. I'm here to tell Dylan he's going to have a crappy week.
Bear down.
No, I'm joking. The Bears are a lot better than the Lions.
Oh, stop.
Wrong. They're still the Bears. Lions cover the 6.5 on the road.
Boom. Roasted. So I'm going to take the Lions to cover. I don't think the Lions win this game. Still too many deficiencies. This offense has played terribly. The Lions just gave up 10 sacks to the Vikings. And while I don't think they give up 10 sacks, just like the Rams in Seattle, I think Stafford's going to be under a lot of pressure. But I think the Lions are going to be up late. And then they're going to lose a heartbreaker by 4 points. So give me the Lions to cover.
I'll take a little bit more time with this, just so everybody understands. So I am primarily a Chicago sports fan. It said I was born and raised here. I actually was born in East Hazelcrest, Illinois. Chicago is amazing. I love the sports there. And I love this team. The Chicago Bears are amazing. And the defense is I think is the best in the NFL. And they've been the best without Khalil Mack. Matthew Stafford will be broken in half. This offense already can't score. They aren't going to score on my team. Matt Nagy is going to just hurt Paul Pasqualoni's soul. And the Bears will absolutely cover.
The monsters of the Midway are coming. Terminate this game if Matt Stafford does break, which is a distinct possibility with our offensive line against that defensive front. But did you really just use the word amazing in the same sentence as the Chicago Bears? I know you're feeling high, you're mighty 5-3, but to use the word amazing to describe the Chicago Bears that are still the Chicago Bears, that are still starting Mitch Trubisky at quarterback,
hell yeah,
that still haven't beaten anybody of substance. Come on, man. Come on. That's literally all I can tolerate tonight. That is what we're ending the podcast on. Thank you for listening, and good night.
Bear down.
Go green.